Welcome to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate for the next hour, your local real estate news magazine. I am Mark Schneidman, your local realtor since 1988, with Coldwell Banker, Santa Barbara resident since 1977, here with talent on loan from the California Department of Real Estate. As usual, the fourth segment, the weekly multiple listing update, tracking median home price sales weekly and year to date. That's in part four. Current active inventory, all compared to last year's numbers. You can call us today at 564-1290. That's live Monday mornings, 564-1290. At all other times, go to RadioRealEstate.com, RadioRealEstate.com. You can actually listen to past programs, search MLS listings, or call me at 452-2428, 452-CHAT. But live Mondays, 564-1290 to get through. Did get a call from a listener on after the Saturday broadcast, and she had left a message on the studio phone number, the main number. Said, God, I've been trying to call in. Someone else called in. You've given out this number. So we have to clarify. I read on Saturdays, the Santa Barbara News Press business section has been reading a guy named Dan Aleph, who writes a column called Titans of Fortune, and I think he's making a fortune from this column, his own Titan. And I emailed him, and it turns out, lo and behold, he lives right here in Santa Barbara, and now he's right here in the studio, and we decided to call today's program Titans of Real Estate. Good morning, and welcome to Radio Real Estate, Dan Aleph.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for having me on.
Pleasure. Pleasure. There's many different names to talk about. And when you think about titans of real estate, people who made their fortunes in real estate and not so much made a fortune. I mean, today everyone thinks of Donald Trump, I suppose, as the real estate man, but maybe had a big impact on real estate and cities or the state or any state. Who comes to mind?
Well, I think if I look at all the titans, and quite a few of the titans invested heavily in real estate. Many of them bought ranches or bought massive mansions, no different than today's moguls. But if I think of one person who stands out most, it would be Harry Chandler. Harry Chandler was the one of the first publishers of the Los Angeles Times. He was a very bright guy. He came from the East Coast when he, as a freshman in college, he tried some kind of a prank where he jumped into a vat filled with ice, developed a really severe case of pneumonia. So his parents sent him to Los Angeles, and he arrived in Los Angeles.
Where all the other nuts are.
Where all the other nuts are, or were, and hopefully less so today. But he showed up, and it was a city of about 12,000 people, a very quiet, easygoing city. And he ended up marrying the daughter of Harrison Gray Otis, who owned the Los Angeles Times. And that's a pretty interesting story. But as a result, he and his father-in-law decided that they would be interested in buying real estate. And they used the Los Angeles Times to market their real estate interests. So they started a winter edition, and the winter edition was sent out to the East Coast. They started the Rose Parade to demonstrate how flowers could be grown midwinter. And the whole purpose of this was to to get buyers to come out to California, to Los Angeles, and buy their real estate interests.
You're kidding.
No, and it
That's
became
amazing.
Monumental. They ended up owning more of Los Angeles than anybody else. They owned real estate and in Los Angeles and San Pedro. They bought the Van Nuys Ranch, and then they brought water to Los Angeles, but only to the edge of the Van Nuys, the San Fernando Valley. And they brought the water to the edge, not to Los Angeles, because they owned the Van Nuys Ranch and most of San Fernando Valley. And then the city expanded into the San Fernando Valley, into their interest. They bought the land for its agricultural dry agricultural value. When they brought in water, the value of the land exploded, and they made fortunes.
What years? When did he get into this?
Well, he arrived in Los Angeles in the 1880s.
Oh, my.
And by the time he died in 1944, Newsweek magazine, in its obit, said that mainly Harry Chandler was responsible for turning the city of Los Angeles from a small, quiet pueblo of 12,000 to a city of 2 million in his lifetime.
Well, that does sound like a man who might have had the biggest impact on with real estate. And now, when he came out here, did he come from a family of wealth? He married into a family of wealth.
Well, he when he came out, he was just a college student who was looking for a way to survive. And he found a place to pitch a tent on right in Cahuenga Pass in Los Angeles, right where Universal Studios is located today. And then he went and sold fruit to these Mexican farmers into San Fernando Valley who were working on the Van Nuys Ranch. He went back east, went back to Dartmouth, suffered another recurrence of pneumonia, came back, and then he got married, but he didn't marry the daughter. He married another gal. She died. He had two daughters by her, and then he married the publisher's daughter. So it was he didn't come from wealth, but he was a very bright guy, extremely bright, and he knew exactly what he wanted to do.
Now, this whole story, you know, Harry Chandler is such a huge impact, as you're talking about. In fact, last week or the week before, we had a man on. We talked about the history and evolution of the freeways in L.A. and building up, actually, probably as a result of Harry Chandler and his magic.
Well, I'm not sure those are those freeways or parking lots. I'm not sure today.
Well, actually, his perspective, relatively speaking, is he took the perspective that actually they're even if you're moving at 20 miles an hour at times, it's okay. He took a very interesting perspective that people got so spoiled back in the 40s when this was all, or I should say, I guess, 50s or when they were all built, 50s, 60s, where people could go across town at 60 miles an hour and you'd be there in a second. And now you have this congestion and it's slowed down a bit. It's still damn good, but it's, you know, it's just compared to...
That's my problem. My problem is I remember the 60s and the way freeways were, so I don't like it anymore.
Right. Now, you were a personal friend of Harry Chandler?
No, I was not.
Because you're pretty old, aren't you?
I'm really old, but he died before I was born, so it's really hard to befriend him.
But Harry Chandler is a name I don't know. I know the Chandler Pavilion.
That was
Harry
Chandler's dynasty continued because he had a son, Norman Chandler, and Norman Chandler was married to Dorothy Chandler, Chandler Pavilion.
Oh, okay. Okay, so now this water issue you brought up is key. I love this story. The movie Chinatown, what's the connection with Chinatown and Harry Chandler?
Well, Chinatown kind of tried to tell the story in its own way. It wasn't very accurate. It was a fictional account. What really happened was that there were certain laws passed by Congress to reclaim lands and under Teddy Roosevelt, and Harry Chandler picked up on this very quickly. And what he did is he arranged for the federal government to express an interest in buying all of these water rights through the Owens Valley, which was at that time... a beautiful Nile Valley-like river with green plush grounds on both sides. If you drive up to Mammoth today, it's all high desert. But in those days, it was all green with trees, just beautiful, had an enormous amount of water. And so he focused on that. And then what he did is he got the federal government to appear to be interested and had people negotiate to acquire all the water rights. And then they suddenly expressed no interest in the reclamation project. Instead, they turned all the water rights to Los Angeles. And then the water was brought in from the Owens Valley to, as I said, the edge of the San Fernando Valley, not where the city of Los Angeles was, but with its massive aqueduct.
His Van Nuys Ranch?
Right to the edge of his Van Nuys Ranch. Very, very capable guy.
Now, how far where did the movie go? Do you know the movie intimately, or do you know where they took it differently from historical?
Well, they just took little parts of it, and obviously they focused on different elements of the story. But it was based around that story of water. Where the movie was accurate was depicting what the city was doing. For a long time, the city showed that reservoir levels were dropping. There wasn't very much water because they were draining the reservoirs at night, which is what they showed at Chinatown, and got the population of Los Angeles to be really scared that it didn't have enough water supply. As a result, L.A. voted very much in favor of having an aqueduct built and the water brought in. So in that part, Chinatown was very
accurate.
This
would have been in the decade or the years, what?
This was 1930s.
The 1930s. So yeah. It's kind of the way they snookered in state water in Santa Barbara and got everyone to vote in state water. Is there any similarity there?
That's an interesting...
Does anyone need state water? I mean, what the heck was that about?
Well, I think we got so it was a fear tactic. Everybody got so scared of having that long-term drought, not recognizing that in California we have a 20-year cycle of drought, you know, excess water, and then normal periods. People get scared. They voted in.
And I knew not to get suckered in on that. I saw the movie Chinatown.
There you are.
See? I knew that. Now, did Harry Chandler ever stick a knife up someone's nose and slit their nostril?
No.
Jack Nicholson
got
in the movie?
You know what was really brilliant about Harry Chandler was that he did everything from the background. He never liked to be in the public limelight. His biggest competitor in terms of publishing and real estate interest was William Randolph Hearst, who loved the limelight. But Harry Chandler stayed behind. And a kind of an ironic little incident is that when William Randolph Hearst was running out of money in building Hearst San Simeon, he needed to borrow money. And little did he know that the mortgage on the Hearst Castle was held by Harry Chandler for a time.
Oh.
So that's how Harry Chandler would not have slit anybody's nose, and he would have made sure if anybody's nose was slit, it would have been as far removed from him as possible.
Unbelievable connection. We're talking with Dan Aliff, who writes a Saturday piece in the Santa Barbara News Press in the business section called Titans of Fortune. And today we're talking about Titans of Real Estate because you're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate. Good segment, Harry Chandler. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We've got a list of names that we hope to touch on Titans of Real Estate. I want to ask a question about John Rockefeller, which, of course, Senior, you did an article, a piece on him about a month or two ago. And there's James Irvine from Irvine County. They're from New York City, John Jacob Astor. Many, many names up in San Francisco. We got Henry Kaiser in Hawaii, Sam Brannan, Sacramento.
Right.
James Lick, San Francisco.
Yes.
So who knows what we'll talk about. You never know where you're going on Radio Real Estate, but you're always making good time. Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate. Stay tuned. You'll be right back. And remember our phone number, 564-1290, 564-1290, on the live Monday morning broadcast.